This is Anthony DeLongis, Simon Curlo, and Ottavio Consone from Highlander the Series, and you are listening to Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Hi, everybody. This is Carmel McPherson, President of Highlander Worldwide. Please join us for the Highlander 25th Anniversary Convention, The Gathering, in Los Angeles, California, October 20th to the 22nd. You're listening to Blood of Kings on the Fandom Podcast Network.
This is Kevin with Blood of Kings. I am here with my co-host, Norm. Say hi, Norm.
Hi, Norm.
We are on a special Watchers Field assignment. That's what you're listening to. You're not listening to your regular Blood of Kings episode. I just came off the plane from connecting flight through New Zealand from Australia, and Norm and I are together right now in Norm's car, and we are on a special mission right now.
That we are. We are on the North 405, and we are going north because we have a very special destination and something that Kevin and I have been really excited to bring you and talk to you about. So,
should we tease that later?
Yeah, maybe? We'll tease that later.
Okay, we'll tease that later. First, we would thought that we would talk, kind of catch you up since, Norm and I have been not talking together for the last couple of weeks. But we're actually together for the first time since, I think, like last May of last year, maybe March, when I came out to visit my family and we got together to talk. How long has that
been? Yeah, you came in, it was the Santa Barbara trip. So
that's right, yeah.
So when would that have been? That would have been, I think it was like late, something in May.
It
was in May.
Yeah.
Or anyway, it's going to be May now.
Yeah. So, yeah. And that's I think it was actually in March because we were talking about the Blood of Kings, what we're doing and stuff. So.
Oh, that's right. We started that whole, we started it with the Fandom Podcast Network's Fandom Flashbacks first.
Yeah.
And then we started Blood of Kings in earnest in May.
That's right. That's right.
But when you saw me that time, a year and a few months ago.
Yeah. We were planning the podcast, the actual Blood of Kings podcast.
Matter of fact, when I picked you up at LA, I told you that you needed to come follow me for a quick second because once we left the international part of Tom Bradley, which is the international section of the airport, that March, I was sitting down on a slab of concrete in 2016 waiting for my mom to come back home from the Philippines, and you called me. And you said, hey, Norm, what do you think about doing a Highlander podcast? And that's where Blood of Kings was born.
Yeah, that's right. I was calling you at the airport, and you were sitting there. And for fun, when Norm picked me up at the airport today, we actually went over to that same slab. We took a selfie. We'll post that up later. Mm-hmm. I'm getting kind of the chills thinking about that. That's cool.
It's not really all that long ago, but with so much stuff and so much content that we've put out for Blood of Kings, it feels like that we've been doing this for a long time. But, it's only been, 16 months?
Yeah. Seems like a lot longer than that.
Yeah, well, we're hardworking Watcher Field agents.
That's right. So, yeah, we're of course, when we say that we're on the 405 freeway, for those of you that know, we're not going very fast. But we wanted to get a little recording in because it's the first time Norm and I have actually been together in quite a while, and we wanted to share this recording with you guys, and then we're going to tease what we're heading off to a little bit later. But first thing that we did after Norm picked me up, we went to the Crown Plaza Hotel, which is actually where I am staying the night tonight, because on design, doing a little watcher, as you would say, field reporting and scouting out of where the Highlander TV series 25th anniversary gathering convention is going to be October 20th through 22nd. We wanted to kind of scout out the area and figure out where our Blood of Kings meetup is going to be on that Thursday night before the convention begins, which we have an event page on the Blood of Kings Facebook page. So we wanted to kind of figure out where we're going to be, and we took a quick video just recently. Norm, we're going to be doing it at the Century Tap Room, which is the restaurant on the bottom floor of the Crown Plaza.
You know what's nice about getting on the ground level for a convention is scoping out kind of like the ins and outs and where we should be, and that's something that was really top of our list of things to do, you know, when we got together, Kevin, because we wanted to make sure that we had a nice venue for all the Blood of Kings fans that are going to join us that Thursday night, the 19th, before the convention proper. And it's a great-looking bar, restaurant. It's got lots of space. It's going to be our Joe's for that night.
It is. It is. And I'm going to look into seeing about making a reservation. But we would like to send this message to you guys that if you guys are planning on going to the 25th Anniversary Gathering Convention and you're going to be there and attend the Blood of Kings meetup on that Thursday night, please go on the Blood of Kings Facebook page and say that you're coming so we kind of get an idea of how many people are going to be there and how much space that we may need to reserve. Of course, I'm sure there will be plenty of overflow area, and it's just going to be a fun gathering and get to meet some people we've only corresponded with through Facebook or messaging or email for the first time and see some familiar faces.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I know that you've met some people, Kevin, in the previous convention, that other convention, that happened in December of last year. And I know some of the fans and some of the friends of Blood of Kings are going to have the opportunity to see us this year in Los Angeles. And I think this is going to be a convention for the ages. I know it's called the Gathering for a specific reason, but I think it really is going to be the gathering of gatherings.
Yeah, it's going to be the biggest one in a long time, and it's going to be run very well. Carmel and John have been on top of that, and we really appreciate the information that they have been sharing on Blood of Kings. And also, again, I want to thank everyone on Blood of Kings, the activity that has been on there, and a lot of the new people that have been coming on recently, Norm, and people excited to be rediscovering their Highlander fandom.
Yeah, I think that's really important, and especially in fandom nowadays. Recently, I was on Culture Clash, episode 53, I believe it was, and Kyle and I were talking about kind of the state of affairs of fandom. And when new information gets released to the public in a small snippet form or a picture form or even a small trailer, it's really important for, like, our fandom, which is so small, to be positive about it and to rally behind it. And I know that there's a lot of small and really not significant information that's coming from the camp of Chaz Delhaeske as he's working on John Wick 2 and John Wick 3. And there's not a lot of new stuff coming out, but when you read about it, kind of think about what is happening here in our fandom. We're getting a new movie coming out soon for Highlander that we haven't seen before. This new team, a modernization to it, the way that it's being approached. I mean, it's going to be Highlander for the 21st century, and that's something I think is really exciting.
Yeah, something that will bring new fans into the older property. We also have the Highlander limited comic, The American Dream, that is out. And so it's, as a Highlander fan, it's really exciting. And for us here at Blood of Kings, we're really, really excited to partake in this gathering convention. Really excited. But man, Norm, it's when I you have something very special happening, and by the time people probably hear this, you'll be either ready to go or coming back. You're visiting Scotland, man.
Yes, that's going to be the Watcher field agent trip of trips.
Well, just like I did last year. Funny thing, by the way, I'm giving Norm the same map that I took with me on my trip to Scotland last year, and I circled some very interesting locations. So tell us, give us a little tease of where you're going to be visiting in Scotland.
Well, for the Highlander fans, it's really important when you're planning these trips, and Kevin gave me great advice, and he gave me his Watcher's Chronicle, you know, of course, and he circled on his map, you know, very specific areas, but I think you're alluding to me going to Eilean Donan Castle,
yeah,
and Castle Dunvegan, and Castle Cheerham.
That's right. That's right.
And those are well plotted in the itinerary. When Carol and I were planning on it, I basically said, okay, this is kind of your trip. It's her birthday trip that we're doing.
Right.
And I said, but if you can indulge me these three things, then the rest of the trip is yours to plan.
That's awesome. Now, for those of you that don't remember or may not know, Eilean Donan Castle, of course, is the famous castle that was the Clan MacLeod castle in the original Highlander film.
Right.
But it is actually the castle to the MacRae clan, which has been part of that castle for many years. And, was rebuilt. If you go back and listen to early Blood of Kings when I did my trip last year, it was destroyed at the end of the 17th century by British ships, and it stayed destroyed for a long time until an old McRae member decided to have it rebuilt in the turn of the century, of this century, and it took like about 20 to 30 years to build it up again, and that's what we see it now and also in the movie. Mm-hmm. Then you're going to go to Castle Dunvegan, which is in the Isle of Skye, which is the actual Clan MacLeod castle and one of the oldest castles you'll visit. So that's going to be really cool. And then, of course, Castle Cheerham is the castle that you see in the Homeland episode where Duncan MacLeod goes back home to Scotland and was actually directed by Adrian Paul himself, and they went there on site. And you can also see that castle briefly in Highlander 3, where Connor goes and does some little sword stuff there. So
okay.
It's a beautiful castle. It's kind of out of the way. It's not easy to see and find like Eileen Donan is, so I can't wait for you to be there. But I'm really excited for you guys, and I'm sure we're going to be talking about that when you get back.
I'm going to take copious notes. Notes.
And lots of pictures.
Lots of pictures, for sure. Yep.
How's your selfie skills?
Not as good as yours, but I'm working on them. It takes practice to be that good, to frame everything and make sure your background's clean, and, you know, there's a lot going on there.
You're right, it does. So,
I'm pretty sure by the end of the trip, it'll be passable.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
But I'm really good at Photoshop. So.
This is true. Well, make sure you take some Highlander cards to get some pictures with.
Oh, definitely.
And maybe put a little bit of Highlander soundtrack on your iPhone or iPod or something like that.
Yeah, that's going to mean me. You know, just recently I posted some pictures of me at the Scottish Highland Festival in the Orange County Fairgrounds. And when you hear bagpiping of any kind,
yeah,
like around you, I'm not Scottish at all, like genetically or in my genealogy, but there's something that stirs something inside you, something very primal.
Right.
When you hear the bagpipes, and they do their job, and I can't wait to hear, I don't know, I probably not there live, but maybe I'll play some bagpiping like when I'm hanging out on the lock and, you know, just absorbing it all.
Well, remember to take my advice, Norm, that when you go there, take all the pictures you can, but also take some time to put the camera down.
Sure.
Smell Scotland, just soak it in and enjoy it, and take some good hiking boots and maybe something you don't mind getting wet into.
Like, do you remember when Joe saw Duncan and Duncan goes, "Are those your good shoes?" And Joe goes, "Not anymore."
Yeah.
That was in Homeland.
Well, as you could probably hear, some motorcycles going by. We're still on the 405 freeway here, heading north.
If you're a Californian, you're always on the 405.
Yes, you are. It's one of the main arteries, and a joke among many traffic connoisseurs, if there is such a person.
The Californians from Saturday Night Live. That skit?
Oh, gosh.
As funny as it is, there's a lot of realism in that skit.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So I just got back from Australia, and I did a little bit of shopping over there. First of all, I brought back a all-region Blu-ray player. I picked up, I think it was a Highlander 2, I guess it's a Region 2 used copy, because it looked like it had a really cool cover to it, so I picked that up. Mm-hmm. Picked up some other movies as well. But when Aaron and I were in downtown Melbourne, there was a Highlander bar.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we didn't have enough time. We were going to try to come back to it, but we ran out of time. But there's an actual Highlander bar on, like, Highlander Street, which is funny, and kind of hidden in downtown Melbourne. So when I go back, we're actually going to make time and do that. And also, if you are down there as well. But it looked really, really cool. It's just funny when you're doing traveling and you see Highlander-type things when you're, you know,
you're such
a big fan.
When you walk up to the bar, are you allowed to order more than one of anything, or can there be only one? Yeah, I had to put that in there.
Oh, man. Oh, check out. There's the Getty Center.
The famous
there.
Getty, also known as Starfleet Command from Star Trek Into Darkness.
That's right. How funny.
Yep.
Wow. Man, it's good to be back in California. For those that may not know, I'm actually born and raised in Southern California, just north up in Santa Barbara. So this is all coming back to me, and it's good to be back here. But it's awesome to be back with you, Norm, talking Highlander. I'm excited about this, man.
Yeah, it's been, a couple of shows. But you know what? Mike did a really fantastic job when we were on the mic together. We just finished doing his Chamoli's Choice, which are the two special editor picks, and those are going to be coming up soon later on Blood of Kings. And we had a lot of fun getting together, and we shared a lot of memories all the way back to 1995 when he and I were at the Joe Kubert School together, and I introduced him to the collectible card game, and then he started watching the series, and you know, we have chewed up a lot of Highlander knowledge, like almost to the point where we're that couple that can finish each other's thoughts. And that happened a couple times when we were doing that, the retrospective and commentary. So I hope that the Blood of Kings fans enjoy that, because we do have a lot of fun doing the deep dive respective reviews and commentaries. And I think that those turned out really good. So yeah. Thanks, Mike, for you know, sitting in the captain's chair in a way.
Yeah, the fan picks we've been doing have been so much fun. Of course, we have that contest still going on, right?
That's right. Yep. It's going to be running until the end of September. And that is all about sending us an iTunes review. And we're not asking for any special star rating. Of course, we'd love to get 5 stars because that's the maximum amount of rating that you can give. But we also want to get really positive, constructive reviews. We want to know how we're doing, how Kevin and I are doing on the mic in providing this content to you on Blood of Kings. So let us know if you really enjoy what we're doing. Please write us up a really nice commentary and review. If there's something that you would like for us to cover that we haven't done yet, a subject matter or something that is really important to you, let us know. And also email us those suggestions as well.
2.6 miles. Oh. You're still on the fastest route.
There's our GPS. Yeah, oh, and just to clarify, too, for those reviews, make sure you search out the Fandom Podcast Network. And that's where you would leave the reviews for Blood of Kings or any of the other shows as well. But we definitely want to get some Blood of Kings feedback. So we really appreciate that. And Norm, what does the winner get?
The winner gets their own fan pick. So much like the fan picks of the past that we've done reviews on, that's going to be your special prize for writing us that excellent review that we're going to read. And then Kevin and I are going to deliberate and then pick out the one that we think represents like the best review out of all the reviews that have come into the inbox there. And we'll see what happens. But good luck. Make sure that you write us what you really think about the show and let us know how we can bring you even better content here on Blood of Kings.
Perfect. Well said, man. Well, as we still head up here on the 405, Norm, I think it would be a good time to maybe tease what we're doing right now. And I thought maybe you can kind of give us a little backstory of why we're doing what we're doing right now.
Well, this is the first time I've made this trip. This is actually the second time I'm going up to this particular location. And Kevin and I are heading north, way north, into Canyon Country, because in Canyon Country is where you will find Anthony DeLaunch's Rancho Indelo, and that's where we're headed right now. The last time I did this was actually kind of like in the pitch dark at night. This was in November last year, but as you can see, the landscape is getting really sparse.
Yeah.
This is kind of like fire country also, if anyone is, you know, irresponsible enough to throw a lit cigarette out here. But we're really excited. We're going to go see Anthony, and we're going to interview him for a very special event that's coming up for him called Combat Con, where he will be offering his supersonic.
In 3.2 miles.
Thanks, Siri. So this is live. This is live radio, folks. So
yes.
She's letting us know that there's an accident ahead and an accident on the 405. How long could that be? We don't know. We could be here till tomorrow. So, but anyway, so we're going up to go see Anthony and talk to him about his course that he's teaching at Combat Con on August 13th. That's Sunday, August 13th.
Is that Friday? Is that Sunday or Friday?
I think it's Sunday. Well,
we'll find that out. We'll clarify that.
Right, because he's going to tell us in the interview.
That's right.
But it's his supersonic flexible blade class, and some of you have actually taken that.
Yes, the bullwhip class, which was probably the highlight of my training that I had at Lakeland, Florida convention, and it was really nice to get to know him and his lovely wife, Mary. So we're really excited to talk to him and see his ranch. This will be a first for me. I'm really excited. And we reached out to Anthony, and he was wonderful and great and accommodating for us. And we are on his way to meet, on our way right now to meet him at Rancho Indelo.
You know what's funny, Kev, when you said that, hey, Norm, would you mind picking me up at the airport? Because I have a soft layover. And I said, yeah, sure, I'll pick you up. What do you want to do? And I said, do you remember? You said,
I said, Norm, let's try to do something Highlander-y.
And I was scratching my head. I'm like, what are we going to do? I'm like, what? Highlander-y. I mean, what can we possibly do? And no joke, folks, I'm like, I didn't really know how to plot my course about that. And then, lo and behold, Anthony and Kevin like worked out this fantastic opportunity for all of us to get up to the ranch, and here we are. This is where we're headed.
Yes. Well, we're going to go ahead and bring this recording down to a close here, but I just want to say it is good to be with you, Norm, in person, talking Highlander,
yeah, buddy.
Doing Highlander-y things.
Highlander-y things.
Having Highlander-y things with us, so really excited, and we're excited to share this with you. This is Kevin. I'm with Blooded Kings here with Norm on this special Watchers mission. What would you call this again?
Watcher field trip.
Watchers field trip. All right.
Yep.
Well, till next time, stay tuned. We will give you an update of what's going on at Rancho Indelo in our interview with Anthony DeLonges. This is Kevin.
This is Norm.
All right. Till next time on Blooded Kings. All right. Here we are. Blood of Kings, Watcher Field Assignment. My name is Kevin. I'm one of your hosts of Blood of Kings. With me is Norman.
I'm the other host of Blood of Kings.
Yes.
I'm too excited to not smile and laugh and all that kind of stuff you're not supposed to do in a podcast, right?
That's right. Well, we're really excited. Norm, why are we excited? Where are we?
We are on the veranda of Rancho Indelo.
Rancho Indelo. And who owns and runs Rancho Indelo?
Well, I think he can introduce himself.
I prefer Rancho Indelo because Indelo sounds like I'm lazy.
Rancho Indelo, okay.
And goodness knows I'm not lazy.
Well, we have a very special guest here. And Norm, since you have a little more history with him, I'll let you introduce him.
Oh, gosh. You're putting me on the spot.
Yes, I am.
This is live stuff.
That's how rumors start. just the fact that he spent more than one night here.
It's my great pleasure to be sitting here in the veranda of Rancho Indelo, looking at this gorgeous landscape, and not quite on the infinity deck, although we did visit that earlier. And we are sitting here with Anthony DeLonges, and I don't really want to take up too much of the time here on the interview because I'm super nervous when you put me on the spot. So it is our great pleasure to be here, Kevin, and it's we're very thankful that Anthony and Mary invite us up here to discuss a couple of really key events that Anthony has coming up.
Yes. We are here, Anthony and Mary, were very kind to invite us up here to the ranch, and it's absolutely beautiful. I'm from Southern California, and this reminds me of home, and what a great place to conduct this interview. Anthony, first of all, introduce yourself, say hi. And tell us a little bit about what's going on with you. Just give us first of all, a little average day of your life here up at the ranch.
Well, hi. I'm still Anthony. You kind of introduced me, so I think that's good. Well, this is our little slice of heaven. This is where our home is, and this is also where my school is. And people come from all over the country, all over the world, really, to train with us here. In all of the things that I do, my own journey with bladed weapons is some 45 years and counting at this point. I still do all the European weapons. Saber was my weapon of choice, and then also broadsword and rapier and dagger and small sword. I also had the great pleasure of training with Gurudan in Asanto for almost a dozen years, and between my fencing master, Ralph Faulkner, who I also trained with for about 15 years, he was the sword master to the stars and a two-time Olympian, and he was the first great teacher in my life. Dan Inosanto was certainly the second. And because of the two of them, I was able to create my distinctive DeLonges rolling loop style of whip artistry, which is more efficient, more accurate, and much more visual. That's what I trained Michelle Pfeiffer and Harrison Ford with. And it's now been some 30 years that I've been honing and refining that. And I'm very proud of that because the whip is 5,000 years old that we know of. It dates to 3,000 BC in both the 3,000 there. Math was never my strong suit. BC in both the Chinese and Egyptian cultures. And any culture that ever domesticated animals had a whip of some variation or another, and man being man, what a great tool. What a great weapon. So I've investigated both of those avenues. And it was because of my work with bladed weapons, thanks to Ralph Faulkner, Maestro Faulkner, and then Filipino weapons and the footwork and the angles. I wasn't really introduced to, because I started my first martial art was fencing, and European fencing evolved to be very linear, particularly in the sport version. I went to the collegiate nationals 3 times, and I was Western Intercollegiate Saber Champion my senior year in college and stuff. But so I was used to that. And then when I got introduced to Dan Inosanto and he started taking me into all of the other angles that are possible, and I struggled with that footwork until, I started looking into the whip and went, oh, what he's trying to get me to do is my entire body to line up to do the same thing at the same time. Which, is the perfect metaphor for how I see the whip, which a small amount of focused energy produces literally explosive results. So it evolved because of the two of them, and then, of course, my work. And in spite of the fact that everybody said I was doing it wrong, some 30 years later, I think I've proved them wrong. And
I would like to think so.
It is a lot of fun, and I look forward. Hope people come out, because I have created something that is easier and more efficient and more accurate and more aesthetically pleasing. And then I also look on it, as a combative applications for multiple ranges.
Right.
Most people, they're very happy to make a big noise, but that's kind of step one, and then where do you take the knowledge from there? And, right. So it's great. And today happens to be Guru Dan Inosanto's 81st birthday. So I posted a little, regards and respects to him, online today. So yeah, I'm very delighted. Now I'm studying Shinkendo. I've been, this will be my 10th year. I'm a black belt in that. I'm an instructor in that. But it's nice to go and be a student. And I study with Sensei Matthew Lynch, who is, he is directly under Kaiso Obata. He is a superior interpreter of Kaiso Obata's genius. Yeah. So I don't have to wade through quite as much of the Japanese. Sensei Matthew does that for me. We're actually doing a at Dragon Fest on August 5th. I'll be demoing with Sensei Lynch. And if people can come out, it's Dragon Fest. It's in Burbank. It's August 5th, and we'd love to see you.
Well, speaking of your upcoming events and also your supersonic flexible blade whip class, which both Norm and I have had some experience under your tutelage, you have Combat Con coming up here, August 10th through 13th. Tell us a little bit about the history that you have with this convention and what you're going to be doing on the Sunday night of the event.
Well, I'm trying to think if this is the fifth or sixth year. I don't pay much attention to time, and that works out for me most of the time. We've been a part of it since its inception. Jared Kirby, who's now Maestro Jared Kirby, which is quite wonderful. He received his maestroship in swordplay from the Maestros Martinez this year, after many years of diligent study. And Tim Ruzicki, were the co-founders of Combat Con, and their idea was to bring together experts in Western martial arts, things like broadsword, longsword, German longsword, Italian longsword, rapier, dagger, small sword, European, wrestling. It was long been my contention that there is no Asian martial art that does not have its mirror reflection in European arts. It's just they were a little better at writing it down. When I look at the Chinese Jin as very much like the European small sword, you could go on and on. My studies in Japanese Shinkendo and the Japanese katana, and I look at the positions of German and Italian longsword, and their guardias are virtually identical. And of course, when I teach, and you know, Norm can testify to this, because as a martial artist, you know, I had my own struggles because I have a tendency to overthink things, which makes me a good teacher and not a very good student. So I can recognize that in other people. And then, of course, when I'm working in the business, both of these, I'm looking to find a way to make something logical and to help people see the big picture so they can not get lost in the minutiae. Because you can spend an entire lifetime on any art, and it's not enough.
Right.
But if you start identifying that there are fundamentals and concepts that connect all of the arts, because as Bruce Lee said, he called them the ribbons of truth. But he also said, we all only have two arms and two legs, so until that changes, you know, you're going to find these places where the arts intersect. Hmm. And, for example, when, you know, I first started to break something out, see, to me, the I created my system with the whip, first off by utilizing structure and alignment, which is, you know, key to all everything I do.
Keep your elbow straight, Kevin.
Well,
I remember
think of it this way. Here's the simplicity of it. Your hand is behind your weapon, your elbow is behind your hand, your body's behind your elbow. If you have that, you have skeletal alignment. You extend on the attack, you absorb on the defense, because then you're able to manipulate the energy and, you know, redirect it and just, but that simplicity. If you have a sword, it does you no good behind you.
Yes.
Obviously, the same thing is true of a whip. And in all bladed weapon systems, there's 8 angles of attack. There's verticals, down and upward. There's horizontals, forehand and backhand. There's descending diagonals on both the forehand and backhand, and ascending diagonals. Now, you can cut on all those lines. You can cut in reverse. In Japanese swordplay, that's called kaishi. You can cut with the true edge and come back with the false edge, which you get in European rapier a lot. You can thrust on all those lines. Some of them are a little awkward and bizarre, and you don't use them very much.
Right.
But just, you know, when you are looking at the overview, oh, there's 8 angles, period. You could say there's 360, but let's simplify, yeah. Okay? With footwork. There's forward and back.
That was what I struggled with. I remember it was footwork.
So I'm trying to basically get you out of your head and go, you walked in here, didn't you?
Yeah.
You walk in a straight line, you're now doing European footwork. So yep. You can have an advance and retreat. You can have a step forward or a pass forward or a passe en avant or whatever you want. It doesn't matter what you call it as long as you understand, oh, this is what it accomplishes. Because every art you study will have a different name for it, but every art will have 8 angles of attack. Same thing with your foot. It's forward and back. It's side to side.
Right.
It's descending diagonal. Build a wall and get behind it. It's ascending diagonal. Erect a wall and move offline, which means you get closer and you create a new center line where you have superior leverage, which is a foundational principle in the destreza, or the mysterious circle, as we used when we did Highlander. So there's 8 angles. Again, it's an asterisk if you want to visualize that. And circle. That's all there is. Now, some styles really tart that up, you know, and they they do all kinds of wonderful flowery things, but they are basically still working those simple 8 angles plus circle. Okay, and you combine the upper and the lower body, and now you're essentially in Star Wars, because you have the Force.
I understand that.
Okay? So that's how I like to teach, and that's... But it's been a long journey, you know, for me to look at this and go, I'm really making this much more difficult than it has to be, aren't I? And so when I watch other people do the same thing, you know, that's one of the things we talk about is, well, okay. And it allows me to key into something somebody already knows. So I'll always say, you know, I often ask, do you play golf? And most people go, no. And I go, good for you. My favorite golf quote is, well, Mark Twain was a good walk spoiled. You know, Winston Churchill said, golf is warfare with tools ill-suited to the task. But the idea is the way you grip a golf club is you don't grip it, like, you know, in this death grip.
Yeah.
You know, you don't fist it. It's loose in your hand.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it was actually saber. They're called moulinets, which in Filipino Kali are called redondos or circulos. They're, you did the same thing with, you know, with your hand. What it allows you to do is quickly change the angle, because the angle of your hand sets the angle of the blade.
Right.
So you want to change the angle of your blade. Don't go all the way back to your shoulder and wind up for Pirate Bash Fest. You know, turn your hand. And if you work from the elbow, that gives you the best combination of speed and power, where the hand moves small, the blade moves big, but you're always behind your elbow, so you always have skeletal alignment.
Right.
So it's much more efficient. And that skeletal alignment is vital both in defense, because it gives you strength through structure rather than effort, and through offense, because one of the things we do is called tamashigiri, which means test cutting in Japanese swordplay. And most people could spend their entire sword career never cutting a resistant object, if you will, okay? And the only thing about it is the target doesn't care what color your belt is. It doesn't care, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, was this a good cut? If it's not, the target looks at you and, you know, and laughs. You need that alignment of your hand behind your weapon, elbow behind your hand, body behind your elbow.
Right.
In order to be effective, and you have to cut through the target. You have to cut away from yourself. If you pull it back into yourself, which is intuitive, you actually decelerate and steal your own power. And then if you do something on horseback, which is another one of my loves, if this is in front of me and my elbow is behind my hand and my body's behind my elbow, the power of the horse drives through the target.
Interesting, okay.
If I am offline, all of that power goes back into my shoulder joint. You know, so it's again, as you know, as I mix the arts, I'm going, still true. Yep. Okay.
Well, for those that are interested, you're going to be doing a Sunday night course at Combat Con from 7 to 11. Can you tell the listeners if they're interested how they can sign up for that? Do you
sure.
know?
Well, first off, Combat Con is really great because you have all of these experts, you know, who have spent their lives studying the Western aspects of bladed weapons and also, you know, empty hands, etc. It's a great combination of many things. Please go to combatcon.com. It's real easy. And you'll see, you know, the instructors, you'll see the programs that are being offered. There's all kinds of panels. I'll be involved in those. And there'll be all kinds of classes in different, you know, different disciplines. We like to teach a 4-hour master class, which, other than coming here to, you know, Rancho Andalo to train with us, there isn't any access to it. So this is a rare opportunity for people to study my whip system, you know, in a very concentrated form. You know, you will come out of there being able to crack a whip. First thing I'll teach you is how never to hit yourself.
Which yeah, is remember important. That.
But you'll be able to, you know, you'll be able to crack a whip. We'll speed your learning curve. We'll introduce you to this wonderful, diverse, and very efficient weapon. And so as Combat Con closes on the evening of the 13th, around about 6 o'clock, you know, they wrap it up and goodbye ceremonies at 7, from 7 to 11, we teach our master class, and I call it Mastering the Bullwhip, the Supersonic Flexible Blade, because that's how I look on it. It is based on sword principles, and it's funny because, you know, I reference European saber, I reference Filipino kali, and now I reference Japanese shinkendo, because the elements are all there.
Right.
So whatever it is that helps you go... well, I know how to do that. Then you know how to do this, too.
Right. Well, that's great. Now, we're going to get to the Highlander 25th anniversary convention that you'll be at and what you'll be doing there. But before that, you have another event you're going to called PowerCon, September 9th through 10th in the Los Angeles area at Torrance Marriott Redondo Beach. You'll be doing a whip demonstration. But there's also another reason why this con is very cool. I know Norm's a big fan.
I am. And it's right around the, you know, right around my backyard. So I'm definitely going to attend.
Yeah. Yay. they're going to be having a screening of Masters of the Universe. I had the chance to play Blade, the double swordsman, which was really, I hadn't had a lot of exposure to Masters of the Universe. You know, people say, well, you know, I probably would have been. I just, you know, my life had carried me somewhere else. But Blade doesn't really appear in, you know, in the cartoons.
Right.
He was a character that was introduced in Masters of the Universe, and I virtually got to create him. So that was a whole lot of fun. There even is a plasma whip sequence that I knew was going to be CGI. As I said, here's your 14-inch piece of wood, and I said, well, please, because at that time, my goodness, I was very early on in my whip explorations in those days, but I said, please let me show you how a whip actually works, because your animation will be much more effective if you do. And fortunately, they listened to me, so they filmed me working with the whip. So then when I would go through the motions that I do to create, because my hand is my finesse and my accuracy, I generate the power in my body. So what I was doing with my body, they then matched the animation of the plasma whip. So it was a much more interesting scene. But I not only got to create and play Blade, I also ended up and I trained Dolph Lundgren, which was a whole lot of fun. And I got some stories about that. So I believe there's going to be commentary throughout this. And then I also ended up doubling Frank Langella at the end. And there's also some stories that go with that.
So if you want to hear some good stories, attend this convention, right, Norm?
But there will be a commentary. And then the next day we'll also do a sword demonstration and a whip demonstration. Probably what it will do. Which is something I'm hoping to do with Braun as well. But at PowerCon, I'll be doing it with my wife. Actually, she's going off to run, I think, a 10K that morning, and then she'll be coming back to a demo with me. But we do a thing where we let the audience choreograph. It's like you be the director. So essentially, we will pick two weapons. And I like picking weapons that aren't matched. Because if you do two weapons that are the same, like rapier versus rapier, or saber versus saber, or broadsword versus broadsword, you have that wealth of knowledge, but you also, this is how this weapon is used. But if you pit one of those weapons against something else, right, now you have, because whoever selects a weapon, they choose that weapon because they feel powerful and invulnerable with it. And each weapon has its strengths, but each weapon has its vulnerabilities. So when you pit those strengths and those vulnerabilities against each other, you are pitting the extension of that character, against each other. And it makes for much more interesting choreography. So what we do is, it's like choose the weapons, okay? Who has the first move? All right, I attack. She defends, and she will do A defense, B defense. Which one? B. Okay, so I attack, she does B, then I do counter, A or B. Okay, A, and we do that. And so, and you watch it, because everything you do tells a very specific story. And I find that trading Jeopardy gets the audience much more emotionally invested in the characters. And so that's the way I like to work.
Very cool. Now, Norm, I didn't mean to put you on the spot there. I figured you might want to go.
Well, I think it's going to happen.
Good. Familiar face.
Well, speaking earlier of the Highlander 25th Anniversary Convention Gathering, October 20th through 22nd at the Crown Plaza at LAX, that Norm and I will be at, and we want to also remind our listeners that we're also going to be having a special Blood of Kings meetup at 7 p.m. At the bar on the first floor of the Crown Plaza. The Crown
Tap room,
yes. The Crown Tap Room, yes. Really great location. Looking forward to being here. Make sure you go on the Blood of Kings Facebook page and click on the event there that we have tagged, so you guys can, we know that you're coming. But, Anthony, you're going to be there teaching. Tell us a little about what you're going to be doing.
Well, first off, I'm really delighted to be a part of this, and Carmel McPherson, she puts together a terrific, convention that, I know the fans are going to have a great time at. I will be teaching a 2-hour version of Mastering the Bow with the Supersonic Flexible Blade. I believe most classes will be on Friday, but we're also looking into the possibility of teaching some on Saturday and Sunday if there is interest. But we will be doing that. And then I've proposed, and Braun has expressed an interest, so I'm hoping this will go forward, that when we were at a previous convention that shall go unnamed, we started playing around with this and looking at comparing and contrasting Japanese katana with German longsword, of which Braun is an expert. He's also very accomplished in katana as well. But so we will be doing that. And then I've also proposed a class in the art of double weapons, which all of these hopefully will be two-hour classes. And I want to talk about, you know, you have a weapon in each hand, you know, which begins first with you have a dominant weapon, and then you have your first weapon is sometimes referred to as your checking hand or your live hand, which if you don't have a weapon, it becomes a weapon in and of itself for deflection or envelopment or, you know, to promote disarms, etc. But of course, if you have a tool, that's made even better. So that tool might be a dagger, or it might be a second sword, or it might be a stick, or whatever it happens to be. So what we'll be doing is introducing, okay, right hand, left hand, same, same. Change your feet, you know, the dominant weapon changes. If it's a long and a short, that gives you these advantages. If they're two of equal lengths, it gives you that advantage. You know, if they're, and it'll just be a lot of fun. And I know we're going to be able to cover a whole lot of ground. And one of the things I mentioned to Carmel is, you know, in our classes, you know, we always focus on structure, and we focus on safety, so that people can be very confident, you know, and really go, oh, I'm going to have a great time, and you know, I can do this. And the other aspect of it is, it's not. There's going to be a lot more mental exertion than physical exertion. So if somebody can walk into the room, they can take this class.
Right, right.
And, you know, we will carry each person along, you know, and challenge them individually, but at the same time move everybody as a group, because it's never a competition.
Right.
Well, you know, somebody wise once said that they, you know, look in the mirror. That's your only competition.
Right.
You know, and so in these things, it'll be... it'll be a shared experience, but I think it'll be a whole lot of fun, and it'll be kind of an overview, because we'll reference very specific weapons, but also, again, there is a structure, you know, and an advantage. You know, there are foundational principles that doesn't matter what you have in your hand. You know, you can do something that is both effective and efficient and fun.
Well, now that's not the only thing you're going to be teaching, right? You're going to be doing another whip class. Is that true?
Well, we're starting with a whip class, okay. And then I'm hoping Braun and I will get to do the katana,
okay.
And German longsword, and then we've also proposed, you know, the art of the double weapons, where
right,
you know,
okay.
We'll be doing, you know, basically weapons in each hand, and we'll be pulling from European and Filipino and just several different arts to illustrate that, you know, and keep it interesting, you know.
Now, Norm, I know that when he started describing these courses, you got very excited.
Well, of course. Well, I mean, I've studied a little bit of whip with Anthony, but German longsword is what I'm learning right now. And the katana.
With Hema.
With Hema, yes. Yeah. And then also doing using both hands, because I'm really interested in learning more of the sword and buckler, or the I-33.
Well, thanks for mentioning that, because that reminds me that I will pack a couple of short bucklers. I was just doing some green screen, you know, proof of concept work for a project that I can't talk about just yet. But one of the things I was doing was I was using, hey, as a second weapon, how about a buckler? Because they're shield, but shield is bigger, you know, and as a result, it gives you more protection. But and it is both defensive, obviously, but it's also effective, you know, offensively. I mean, you see some of it in 300 and that. That's a big, big heavy shield where basically it's about creating a wall with the rest of your team and working as a unit. But it can, you know, people sometimes forget that a shield is not just shield, sword, shield, axe, whatever. You know, it's not the anvil chorus. It is actually, you can interrupt people's timing. You can do all kinds of things with it. A buckler is so fast. In some ways, it's like having brass knuckles.
Wow.
You know, like a big plate on your hand that you can use the edge of, that you can use the curve of, and yet it's small enough to where you can also, also if you take it out, I was working with Stephen Davenrish of Davenrish Academy, Stephen Fick of Davenrish Academy, and a very, very knowledgeable fellow who will be at Combat Con. And he's done a lot of work with the manual you just referenced. And one of the things he does, by way of proof, is he just takes that and he puts it out in front of him. And essentially you're creating a cone which of course is what you do with a sword, and people kind of recognize it with a sword, but with the shield, there's a tendency to kind of hold it up like you're, if you've ever taken any martial arts and you hold kicking shields, you've kind of got to take it into the body so you can absorb it. But with this out here, if your elbow's behind your hand and your body's behind your elbow, you can actually just rotate this. And you kind of, you have put up this wall in front of you that things, you know, are deflected around. And because you are intercepting them so far away from yourself, ideally, I mean, obviously it changes as necessity dictates. But if you, you know, by being farther out, your cone is narrower. So it starts and just continues to increase. So you don't constantly, you don't chase.
Right.
You know, you redirect. So that was very interesting. And I was playing with staff and spear. There's a reason why, you know, throughout history, swordsmen, the weapon they fear the most is a pole weapon, particularly staff and spear, but also you get into halberds and bills and, you know, glaives and that sort of thing. But it has reach and it has leverage. Because, you know, depending on, you know, where you position your hand, your leverage is much greater than even someone with a two-handed sword has.
Right.
So it's, and then, of course, you have the rear part, and then you have the middle. So it's a very, very versatile weapon. It's leverage. But anyway, I was playing with that, you know, for this, going, let's, for this green screen work, let's mix weapons up. Let's, okay, I think I'll have a buckler and an axe, or I'll have a buckler and a sword, or I'll have a buckler and a spear. You know, and it's small enough to where, you know, I can work this one-handed and work the buckler, as you might imagine. But I can also still grip the, so I have two hands on the spear, too. So it's very, very versatile. So as, thanks for the reminder, because at Highlander, I should throw a couple of those in the bag and go, second weapon. Because companion weapons were that. I mean, if you look in some of the old manuals, you very often think of dagger.
Right.
But, or if you could have a case of rapiers, which was two, you know, identical weapons. Or you could have, like right now, a saber and a bowie knife would be a Western equivalent of that sort of thing.
Like Kern did.
Yeah, that's right.
Ah,
yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
And then, but you can put any, they have pictures of them fighting with, you know, rapier and lantern. Of course, that was in the dark, and the idea was you were going to try to, you know, flash. Well, take a flashlight and, you know, try to blind your opponent just long enough so that you could step offline and stick them.
Right.
You can also do, like, rapier and cape also. So you can envelop the rapier and then deflect, and then you have your other hand open. So.
Yeah. And surprisingly, that was one of the things Ron Balicki and Diane Inosanto and, of course, Guru Inosanto, one time they showed it. It is very hard to cut through material. Yeah. You can have a sharp knife, and knives are always sharper than swords, but you can have a sharp knife, and if somebody has a bit of material, like a jacket or a cape, and of course that's what it's for, it's hard to get through. It's real easy to, you know, redirect or envelop or capture or blind or, you know, there's a reason why it's called cloak and dagger, because the cloak hides your feet.
Right, right.
And somebody can't see. What's he doing down there?
Norm, I'm going to throw this out there. For the second weapon, you might want to bring an iron pipe.
Well, we are. Hashtag Team Iron Pipe. So.
And remember, never throw your... Don't throw your knife unless you have more than one.
Well, for more information on Anthony's class at the Highlander 25th Anniversary Gathering, make sure you go to Highlander Worldwide for more information. They're going to update that. And please, if you have not had a chance yet and you have a chance, you're going to be there, please take Anthony's courses and check out all the other ones as well. They're a wonderful experience. And from firsthand experience, I can say that Anthony is a wonderful teacher. So before we end this interview, we have to ask you a couple of Highlander questions here, of course. And I want to ask you about the Highlander fan community. As you started with your episode Blackmail and Duende, when did things start to really kind of kick in that this was a really, I guess you would say, a loyal fan base, and how it meant to you as you were, you know, seeing at these conventions and the fans coming up to you? What does the Highlander fan community mean to you?
Well, as you were making that intro, vibrant was the word that came to my mind. The other one was accomplished. years ago, after I'd done my two Highlander appearances, I put together, which is why I really appreciate what Carmel does, we created the Sword Spectacular Weekend, and actually Stan came in, Jim Burns came in, I was very, very grateful for that. But also, you know, we had last minute, we had, you know, producers bail, and, you know, I discovered I was financially responsible for this whole thing, but I had a great team of people and a lot of great volunteers, and we managed to pull it off, you know, and everybody had a grand time. But that was where I really got to meet a lot of people. It was just from all walks of life, really, really interesting people, you know, that had a life outside of, you know, the Highlander universe, but they brought that passion, you know, and that joie de vivre, and, you know, and the things that they love to do in their daily lives, they brought that to their appreciation for, you know, the Highlander universe. And one of the things I always enjoyed about the Highlander universe was, you know, there's a sense of honor and duty and friendship and loyalty and all of these very positive, you know, affirming, it's what we're supposed to be doing, you know, leading by example, etc. And I think that was why it struck a chord. It had a little bit of romance and, you know, a kind of good-looking leading man, if you like that sort of thing. And, you know, I mean, Adrian does a terrific job. You know, I said Christopher Lambert. So it is something that I think it grew beyond itself because it has so much heart. And, you know, people tap into that. And so I'm very pleased to see we're getting another opportunity to gather and, you know, and interact and, you know, share, you know, this love for, you know, both these stories and these characters. And hopefully we can continue to do that.
Well, you made a big impression. I want to talk about two more questions. One about blackmail, your first appearance on Highlander. You obviously made a big impression on Adrian Paul and the crew and Efron that they didn't want to kill your character off. When you were there doing that episode, did you get a feeling that I want to come back and do this again or that they wanted you back? What was that experience like for you?
No. Well, in that, no, what the experience was like was I was, when I first saw the show in the first season, I went, well, this is kind of an interesting idea, and they're still kind of figuring this out. And then I didn't really see it again until almost season three. And then I, you know, I saw it and, you know, was watching Adrian's work and was watching the rest of you know, the work of the writers and the work of, you know, just the whole team. And the seamless flashbacks. And I went, okay, this show has, you know, really come a long way and really found itself. And I was very interested, and I, you know, worked hard to try to push to get the opportunity. And I did. I got the opportunity to be on it. And I got to work with Braun. And Braun, you know, Braun is an enormously talented fellow and also very secure in his own skills, so he celebrated mine, and that's how I like to live my life. I really like to appreciate the abilities of other people, and which made for a great working environment. It's not always that way in show business, but it certainly is, you know, with Braun and with Adrian. We took real good care of each other, and we kind of pushed each other and got the best out of each other, and there was... in terms of, there was just so much going on because I came in, they were already up and shooting. I met Braun. He said, here, you're stuck with this sword. I'm sorry. You know, and we had time to put together, well, we kind of made it up. We went out to the maze, you know, and we're kind of, and we were working it, and then bam, there's Adrian, and then we're shooting that. Then we had a couple other scenes with the hanging and, you know, and we got to the, you know, the finale, you know. With
the pool scene?
The pool scene. My first quickening. And Braun, I showed up and Braun says, okay, well, in this scene, that bookcase has to die and this thing over here has to die because, you know, special effects had rigged it. So literally we hadn't choreographed anything because we hadn't had time. So I show up, Braun and I go through something. Hey, you know, Adrian comes in, you know, we kind of show him what we're going to do. And then after we've done that, you know, I sidekick Adrian and run off. And Adrian goes, yeah, no, lay one in here. I need to give it to him. I says, okay. You know, so bam, I kick him. And then we go off and we go through this, you know, these etched glass doors that were probably cost more than the entire budget for the episode. So it's like, don't hit the glass. You know? So we kind of, you know, played peekaboo through that and then got into this little narrow hallway. And as we're working our way out to the pool, well, then Adrian did that lovely move as I'm dodging away from him. He actually cut the plant, which I don't think was planned. I mean, he probably planned to do it at the moment, but it certainly wasn't scripted. And we got out to the pool and we didn't have any choreography. You know, so we literally were making up, but we were able to because Adrian studies so hard. You know, Adrian, it's one of the things I respect most about him. He takes responsibility. Like he said it many times. I think his phrase was, "The fish stinks from the head on down." But just basically, he takes responsibility for his own training. So every year, I would watch him and go, "You're better than you were last season." You know, which not all actors do that. So that was really cool. Well, he realized that, you know, that it's both credibility and it's also creativity for him. Otherwise, he's doing the same thing. You say, oh, another sword fight and I win too, right? Okay, well, good. Well, let's just get to that part and I can go back to my trailer. He's not like that at all.
Gotcha.
He's always trying to make it better. And that's how I like to work. So to answer your question, there was just too much going on for me to have any feel of that other than when it was over. I went, I really don't want this to be. I'd like to do this again. So for about a year, I pestered, I had a nice relationship with David Abramowitz and Gillian Horvath and, you know, Donna Latow, you know, who were all over the writer's room here, you know, in the Valley. So I was able to kind of, you know, occasionally pick up a phone and, you know, or drop by once or twice and kept going, so how do I get back on the show? And David finally said, well, you know, you were so wonderful and you made such an impression we couldn't possibly. I'm like, David, I'm an actor. I can be different. He says, well, then come up with a story we haven't done. And I went, okay, you're in your fifth season and you're coming up on your 100th episode. I came in and I had like 5 ideas. And I went, oh, no, we've done this. Oh, no, that's kind of like so-and-so. And I think I got to idea 3 or 4. And I said, the debt that can never be repaid. And they like that. So, you know, it was a positive thing, but I didn't know anything then. And shortly after that, I demoed actually The Mysterious Circle to Robert Rodriguez, who was supposed to be doing Zorro.
Mm.
And 3 days later, he left the project. And it was, I'm trying to think who was the director.
I think Martin Campbell directed.
Martin Campbell.
Zorro.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, there you Very go. Good. Thank nice. You. Martin Campbell. Good pull. Martin Campbell directed and he brought in Bob Anderson. You're going, it's Bob Anderson, so what are you going to do? But I didn't get to demo, you know. What was different was it was the Mysterious Circle. It's the fact you're cloyingly close. You are, you know, the lineus infinitus revolves around those 8 angles and the circle. And if nobody steps inside the circle, you're relatively safe, although you're really only, you know, a lunge away from, or right. an advance and lunge away from there.
Gotcha.
But once somebody steps into the circle, you now, all those lines on the floor that look like, you know, an Arthur Murray dance diagram are basically the direct line to some vulnerable spot. So I didn't get to present that, but I did get a call about a week later after that disappointing going, we've written this backstory, they've written this story for you, but you want to go to Paris. Well, yeah. So we went to Paris and I once again got to work with Braun and we once again, you know, made up the choreography, but what he appreciated and what I loved too was he would go, good, I only have to do one half of this. And so we literally did what we like to do at, you know, conventions is, you know, he would have down kind of scripted an idea of what he wanted the fight to do. And of course, the ideas were very, very evenly matched, even to the point where I am the maestro who is teaching him to fight with something other than a Scottish broadsword, or, you know, a claymore or even the katana. And which was another great thing about it, that he put his katana down and re-embraced the rapier and dagger. But that, you know, we're very, very evenly matched, but I have a slight advantage, certainly in the first one, you know, when we duel. And so anyway, it's a lovely storyline. But we literally made up one. The only reason we got any rehearsal at all was because the camera truck broke down. So Adrian and I had about half an hour to 45 minutes to kind of do it together so that we could do our first thing. And then we had the thing in the school, you know, in the salon, which we were which we kind of again made up because we didn't get to each other until we were there, and I had boots on that were like galoshes, and we all kind of went, Bron and I both, this floor is kind of slippery because they've recreated the mysterious circle for us. Let's see if we can get him to coat that when we get outside. And
is that when he did the Coca-Cola trick?
Yes.
Yeah.
He splashed some Coca-Cola on the ground, and you know, it makes it sticky. Yeah. But which helped a little bit, because otherwise, because one of the things I was doing a lot of rotation, you know, because one of the things I'm very proud of in that, actually, Bron and I think almost dared me when we were when we did season 3. I don't think I've ever told anybody this story. At that time, the manuals weren't available, and there wasn't, the only feedback was basically people talking trash about it, you know, Egerton Castle, and, you know, some of the other people, you know, at that time were saying, oh, the Spanish, you know, it's all esoteric, and blah, 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 and, you know, it's overly complicated, and this and that, and I looked at it, and I went, well, basically, they're trying to put into words something that's essentially, by its own nature, organic, and constantly moving. You know, because it's so based on the energy of your partner, which of course all sword play is, but this even more so. And so I went, well, I could see, you know, from Ralph Faulkner and my knowledge of swords, okay, I recognize that. And then from my work with Danny Lasanto and the difference in the angles, which I really hadn't been exposed to that much, I went, well, I see why this is subtle, elusive footwork to create superior leverage, which is a martial arts principle. everywhere, but I hadn't figured that out yet. But, and then I wanted to have this character, you know, the erect, defiant posture of the matador, and then the quick staccato, you know, foot changes and weight changes and angulation, which meant I was doing a lot of twisting, which is why on the slippery floor in the salon, you know, it was problematic. But when we got outside and arrived and it was pissing down rain, and Bron went, I asked you guys to, you know, put some sand into, you know, give us some texture. I said, yeah, we were going to do that, but it rained. Yeah, we know. But it's why if you've ever seen the, you know, the backstage commentary and the behind the scenes footage, there is one where I do a twist to do this and I'm horizontal and I disappear. There's a big sploosh of water that comes out from it. It was like fighting on an ice skating rink.
Wow.
So even though, you know, we're always working to keep our feet underneath us, and that's why, you know, the environmental aspect of it gave it a rawness. But when we got to that final sequence, Bron and I were out in the street outside of the club, working out the choreography, and there were these kind of things, you know, that they put so that cars can't, you know, invade our embassies, you know, the poles.
Yep.
And meanwhile, vroom, 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 little cars are going by down the street at about 50 miles an hour. And then Adrian's inside shooting his flamenco. But he would break away from that and come outside and say, okay, show me what you're doing. And okay, right. And then he'd go back inside and Bron and I continue and dodge the traffic. We got to the final scene, which is the climax. You know, the fight outdoors, you know. It was the night before we're going to shoot that. And he goes, producer's prerogative. You know, I don't know this fight. It's important that I know it. So he shut down filming for half an hour while he and I walked through the fight. Figuring, oh, well, we'll have some time tomorrow, you know, while they set up cameras. Well, we got out there and it was pissing down rain. And there was no cover set. There was no place to go that we could walk through the fight. So we literally did all of our rehearsal on camera.
Wow.
Which, it was about the closest to the, you know, the only other time it was like that was when I worked with Jet Li on Fearless, where the reason we could was because, you know, Jet and I each had our well over three decades worth of, you know, individual experience. So he moved, I'd adjust, I moved, he'd adjust. It was the same thing with Adrian. You know, Adrian, you know, had however many decades he's been studying martial arts and swordplay, you know, and I had my background. So we took good care of each other in spite of the circumstances. The funny thing is, right below where we were, because we're in this gardens, if you recall the scene, which is very dramatic and stuff, but Braun and I went out and looked at the location, and just down below it, there's this gorgeous fountain with, you know, epic statues and stuff, and it's like surrounded by, you know, like a almost like a half shell, you know, miniature bandstand and the fountain in the front, and we're going, well, this is where the location should be. But as Braun probably tells the story, we were overruled by special effects, because special effects had already come out and rigged stuff behind the bushes for the quickening.
Yeah, that's right.
So, but we were there because, you know, as we're fighting on the circle, in the background is the Eiffel Tower. Well, now when it's pissing down rain, our visibility was about 100 feet. So every time I show that scene to people, I go, and the Eiffel Tower is right there. No, really, it's right there. You know, because, of course, you can't go anywhere in Paris that you can't see the Eiffel Tower, really, but except when it's pissing down rain. So that was how that happened. But it was very funny because, you know, Adrian and I go out, you know, and you know, slacks and shirt and this like this, and we're doing our thing, and the whole camera crew is huddled in the back of a truck, and they're dressed like the tuna fleet. You know, they've got slickers on, and it's not raining. But it was so bad that we shot for about an hour and just had the lights flat. You can't see anything. Let's wait until dark, and then we'll pump light through it.
Wow.
So, which looked great from one angle, and then, as I didn't know until I was told later, that the light didn't catch the rain on the other side, so then they had to CGI in some rain to match the angle that the light did catch. But production value wise, it was miserable to work in, and kind of dangerous, but it was $1 million production value, and just working with Adrian, we definitely brought out the best in each other, and we took good care of each other, and somebody should be dead, but you know. Well, and then of course, and I also really like the, because you know, as I was working this out with Braun, I'm going, okay, so how do I win, how do I win again, but still lose, right. You know? And I said, well, they're immortals. How about if you know, I stick him, and he pulls himself onto my blade so that I can't.
I love that scene.
You know, and then Braun did, okay, and I'll do the magic shears of dagger death.
But that goes along the line with the writing, because earlier on in the salon, you were like, would you let a dagger that stick you in the rib? Would you stop at that moment? Would you let that stop you?
Yeah.
And that was the moment in the final fight where it's like, I've learned something. I'm not going to let this stop me, and that, therefore, the advantage. That's where Consoni was like, what happened? You know, it's like, that's not fair.
Hey! Well, yeah, and that is. Well, and you had wonderful writers. I mean, David and Gillian. The whole writing team, that they would plant a seed, and you know that if they planted a seed, it was going to bear fruit. Mm-hmm. You know, but that was a great combination of, you know, and here you are. Remember?
Well, Norman and I recently did an episode of the Highlander Desert Island scenario, where we would we had categories of Highlander, and if
sounds
we were
creepy already,
yeah. We were stranded on a desert island. What of these top categories our favorites would be? And hands down, our favorite duel was, of course, the favorite Duende duel between your character and Duncan. And Norm, I want to leave it to you for our final question regarding Duende for Anthony here, because I know you may have a couple.
Try that in the sand.
I'm putting you on the spot.
Well, with all that we've talked about, I mean, Anthony's covered it very, very well. And I think that, if anything, I'm just surprised that there wasn't, with all of what happened behind the scenes and what everyone's talking about here and on this interview, I'm surprised that there weren't any impalements. I really am. I mean, you had a slick surface. You were fighting in shoes that were ill-fitting. It was dark.
No. They were ill-fitting in the... I've learned. They were ill-fitting in the salon because they were wardrobe boots that were given to me.
Oh, okay, those boots.
The boots that I fought in were actually... it's called a Spanish heel. Mm-hmm. Adrian had his Spanish Linca boots that were, you know, and then I had these, they were Australian riding boots. But it's, they were very similar, but it has like a 3-inch heel. And I used the same boots when I went to do Fearless in Shanghai with Jet Li, because I knew I could fight in them. Actually, the first time I did it was when I did Cyrano with Richard Chamberlain back at the Amundsen in the 70s.
Wow.
And they had me in 3.5-inch heels, and I went, it's a good thing my technique is good or I'd break my ankles. But it, I always, when I go someplace, I take wardrobe and go, if you have better wardrobe than I do, I'll wear yours. If you don't, I'll at least look good, you know. But no, I did have my own shoes, so that helped a lot. But with Fearless, it was my, you know, my Spanish boots, if you will, because I was a Spanish swordsman. And then I had, you know, the leather leggings that I had gotten from Spain when I was working in Spain on Queen of Swords. And then I had my gauntlets. So I went, okay, I know, whatever shirt and pants you put me in, but... Oh, I have a funny story to tell you about pants.
I actually do have one question, because it's one of my favorite moments in that episode. And it's right at the very beginning of when you and Adrian go to your respective corners on the circle. You just kind of look up and take a deep breath. And it's almost as if you're saying, this is going to be quick.
Well, I was kind of going, what a great day. What a great day for revenge, you know?
Was that scripted or was that you?
Oh, it was me.
That's
what actors do. Mm-hmm. You make something of a moment. Let's see if people listen to your podcast, which I hope they do, because this is a lot of fun, guys. I have a story about pants. It comes from Fantasy Island, and I was doubling Ricardo Montalban. And they told me to go get into wardrobe and, you know, put on the pants. And the pants were from Western Costume. But I'll tell the end of that story at Highlander, you know, World if you want.
There you go, folks.
There you go. We got to talk about pants. Fantasy Island.
Well, and the reason I got
pants.
There was because of you guys on, you know, your desert island. I went, well, that's creepy. Oh, I have a creepy story to tell you.
So that's Anthony and Mr. Rourke's pants.
Yes.
To be continued. And Highlander World Fighting.
Better than that. It's actually a little metaphor for working in show business, too, just in case you get too big for your britches. This is a story that will remind you that, nobody cares.
So to put this into context, it is Ottavio Canzoni wearing Khan Noonien Singh's pants.
Yeah.
From Star Trek.
Okay.
I don't think you got your Star Trek 2 reference there.
That's crossing too many streams here.
Well, I want to take this time...
back on the Creepy Desert.
Yeah. The Creepy Desert. I want to take this time, as we wrap this up, Anthony, thank you so much for inviting us here to Rancho Indelo. And also, we got to meet you...
Tell them about the light. You know, I'm known for being able to find camera and find my light.
Oh, yes. He is in the perfect sunsetting light right now.
Call this magic hour?
This is the magic hour. That's right. We took our first picture together.
I look years younger, don't I?
We also got to meet your awesome dogs, Rocky and Shadow. Appreciate mm-hmm. that. And you may have also heard our guest stars, several hummingbirds nearby. But this is it. This is Life on the Ranch, Norm, which you have some experience with.
These are the Michael Christian hummingbirds.
Yes.
For the show.
Our listeners will get that.
We have Disney effects, you know.
This is all natural. This is no post.
Yes.
We are not in an editing room. We are in God's editing room right now.
Exactly. And this beautiful scenery.
Great art director.
Beautiful scenery here with the wonderful weather and the sun setting. And the horses, that's right. How many you got? What, three or four?
Four.
Four.
And,
what are their names?
Oh, we have Latigo and Natchez and Tongve, who we call T or sometimes Tank, and Ringo.
Ringo.
So they're all very different, very individual, all an interesting challenge. It was my dream to ride horses as a boy. I didn't come to it till, you know, my late 30s, really, but some 25 years later, I've been on horseback in 11 countries on 5 continents and always managed to make, you know, the horse my ally, you know, to give me another dimension to the character I was playing. So, but I'm living my dream.
Well, tell the listeners how they can get a hold of you to come experience your ranch.
www.delonges.com. That's DELONGIS.com. There is a link to Rancho Indalo, and you can see that. But come play with us. We not only get professionals from around the world, but we also do an action vacation where you can train to be your favorite action hero, and we will craft a syllabus that suits your ambitions, your desires, your. I've always wanted to try that, and we'll keep you safe and we'll make sure you succeed.
Awesome. Well, Norm, I want to say thank you for helping me make this happen. Again, Anthony, thank you so much for being here and letting us come to your home. And on behalf of Norman, this is Kevin. This has been a special Watchers Field, Watchers Field
assignment.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you guys so much. And until next time, we are here at Bloody Kings.
Bloody Kings?
Bloody Kings.
Thanks again, Anthony.
My pleasure. That was great. That was fun.
Well, here we are. This is Kevin. Norm, say hi.
Hi.
We're a little beside ourselves right now because we just had, as you heard in the interview, an awesome interview with Anthony DeLonges at his ranch, Norm. It was everything I expected and more.
Well, I'm glad. Just to let the listeners know, we are actually driving back from the ranch, and we are on the 405 South headed back to Kevin's hotel. So we're going to finish off our Watchers Field excursion here. But it's always a great time at Rancho Indalo, because we were schooled on that, right?
Yeah,
Rancho
Indalo. I was pronouncing it wrong. Indalo.
We actually, in all seriousness, we can't thank both Anthony and Mary enough for their hospitality. Let me tell you this, folks, in all honesty, if you are ever even remotely considering doing something like this, you have to do it, because first of all, Anthony is a world-class trainer. He is such a great teacher. He loves teaching so much. And Mary is so fantastic, and she loves being able to support Anthony where she can. And then she's also a world-class cook, so you're going to have great meals at the ranch. So if you're just even on the fence, get off the fence, make your plans, make it happen. It's probably one of the best things you'll ever do.
Agreed. And one of the things that we did not get on recording is we had a chance to sit down and just relax with Anthony and drink some Maker's 47 and smoke some cigars. 46, excuse me.
47's not out yet.
And we talked a little bit more about the Highlander Worldwide 25th Anniversary Gathering Convention.
Yeah.
And now, there's a... What did he mention? What was going on in one of the evenings? One of the... one of the Friday night events or Saturday night events where they're going to have a...
I guess the cabaret.
A cabaret, yes. Yeah. And we had suggested the idea, shall we say this here?
We can suggest it.
Yeah, let's suggest it. And he was up for it, mm-hmm. that we have him read as Consone, from the Night at Joe's. Is that what it was?
It was the Evening at Joe's. Yeah, it was the compendium of different stories that was gathered by Gillian Horvath and Donna Latow. And it was he actually wrote that short story.
It was Consone's diary,
Diary, yeah. Yeah. And F. Rob McAsh wrote an extension of Hans Kirschner's story. So there were a bunch of different stars that wrote their own small little, creative piece. And we were hoping that maybe Anthony can actually perform that piece or an excerpt of that piece as part of the cabaret.
Yes. So we're going to make that suggestion. And if you fans listening to this would love to hear him do that in person at the Highlander 25th Anniversary Gathering, please write in and let us know and let Highlander Worldwide know, and maybe we can make that happen. It was great hearing Anthony talk about what he's going to be doing, his upcoming events for Combat Con, and then, of course, what was the PowerCon? PowerCon, where he's going to do some stuff for Masters of the Universe.
Yep.
And the convention, yeah, that was the one in L.A. that you're planning on, I think, going to, right?
Yeah, that's the one in Torrance. And then he's going to be doing a commentary when they premiere the film, and then he's going to be doing a sword and whip demo.
Yes, yeah.
But anyway, I want to thank you guys all for listening and tuning in here. And remember what Anthony said at the end of the interview, if you guys are listening, to let him finish the story when you see him at the 25th anniversary.
That's right, the famous pants story.
The pants story, yeah. I wonder what the ending of that's going to be.
We have to wait, too, because we didn't get that story. No?
No. But I did want to reiterate how beautiful his ranch is, and what Norm said, if you have a chance, please contact him about taking some classes and staying up there. It is absolutely beautiful, and it is definitely worth the trip, so make sure that you guys do that. So to wrap things up here, I just want to say if you want to reach us at Blood of Kings, you can reach us on Twitter at Blood of Kings Pod, or you can email us at bloodofkingspodcast@gmail.com. And of course, please find us on Facebook, where our numbers are growing a lot daily, and that's the Blood of Kings, a Highlander fandom group on Facebook. And then we also have the Blood of Kings CCG collectible card game sister page as well. And Norm, where can we find you on Instagram and Twitter?
You can always find me there at Starfighter1701.
You can find me, Kevin. I am at Spartan_Phoenix on Twitter and on Instagram. And Blood of Kings is also on Instagram, so please look us up there. And also you can find our editor, Mike Sellers. Recently just did some recordings with you for his editor's pick. You can find him at Immortal Chamoli. You can find, of course, the Blood of Kings on the Fandom Podcast Network. You can find us on Podbean and the Podbean app. And recently, Norm, you've recorded, you did a little guest spot on Culture Clash while I was out of country, right?
I did. Yeah, I had a chance to sit in the co-captain's chair along with Kyle, and we had some really great topics to talk about, especially what's going on with Star Trek Discovery.
Right, yeah. So make sure you check out the other awesome shows there. Of course, we've got, as mentioned, we've got the Culture Clash show, our weekly fandom show that I usually co-host with Kyle. And also we have a Good Evening Podcast, our new, brand new show about all things mystery, science. It's Alfred Hitchcock. Right. If you want to know anything about Alfred Hitchcock, please check out that podcast. It's awesome. We also got Couch Potato Theater, hosted by Davis Grayson. And coming soon, we're going to have part 3 of 1987, the movies, after Norm gets back from Scotland.
That's right.
Anyway, thank you guys all for listening. We really appreciate that. Hope you enjoy this special episode of Blood of Kings. And until next time, Norm, that sensation you are feeling, that's the quickening. We are one. We are brothers! Recording is on. Yours is recording here, right?
Yep.
Okay.
In 3, 2, 1, recording.
All right, here we are. Sorry. Start over.
Cut. Back to one.
What's my line?
Jeez.
Go ahead. As soon as he says go ahead and start your introduction. Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. Introduction to what?
The bumper.
You're making me nervous. In 3, 2, 1, recording.
Well, I'm not really nervous. I'm just a bit confused. So, what are we doing here? Is this Lyman Curlo here, you know, saying welcome to Blood of Kings?
Or?
What are you concerned? It's come to my mysterious circle.
All right, let's do another one. We'll say.
What do you mean, let's do another one? That was great. Back to one.
You want
to
listen to Blood of Kings on the Fandom Podcast?
Oh, that's
network.
What you want.
Yes.
Oh, you just see, you didn't say that.
Be the director. You got to be the director.
All right, let's try it again, okay?
Okay.
Go ahead.
First time director, same thing.
All right, countdown again.
Okay, in 3, 2,
Zero Mostel said to Mel Brooks, "This is a director?" Hi, this is Ottavio Consone, welcoming you to Blood of Kings. Wait, that was the wrong accent. All right, cut. Let's do that again. I did like the Mel Brooks thing, though.
Awesome. That was good. This is a great B-roll. All
right, start countdown again.
Okay. In 3, 2, 1, recording.
Buenos noches. This is Ottavio Canzone welcoming you to Blood of Kings.
Cut. That sounded great.
Okay.
Right. You want to say Blood of Kings was on Fandom Podcast Network?
Oh, jeezy peasy.
You could try that again. If you
Right. Same thing to say Blood of Kings on Fandom Podcast Network.
Okay. Are we doing Ottavio Canzone again?
Yes, please. Yeah.
Ah, Lord. You people.
All right.
Okay.
Go ahead.
In 3, 2, 1, recording.
Your people are a lot of trouble. Okay, this is Ottavio Canzone welcoming in Jujututu boy.
I was already going podcast Blood of Kings. Wait, let me read your shirt. No, Blood of Kings, but sport. Ooh, your nipples are hard.